everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Tabletop Crowd. I'm your host, Kristen. Tonight, I am here with two amazing guests, Misha and Wendy, and we're going to be talking about their project, LatAm Breakout, which is five new games from emerging creators in Latin America being brought to print with the support of Soul Muppet Publishing. I'd love to have you both introduce yourself before we hear about the game. So Wendy, can we start with you?
Sure. Hey everyone, my name is Wendy. I'm from Brazil and I'm trans. I'm a writer and game designer. And I don't know what else to say, but I think that covers it.
Awesome. And Misha?
Hello, I am Misha, pronouns they, them. I am a non-binary union organizer from Argentina, also a writer and game designer as of last year, I guess. Very excited to be here.
Thank you both so much for joining me. I'm very excited. There's been a lot of hype about this project for excellent reasons. So I'd love to start by having one of you, whoever would like to, kind of give our listeners an overview of what the project is, and then we can do a deeper dive into each game.
LatAm Breakout is this project that we are kickstarting right now as we are recording. It is already funded, but you know, we're looking forward to overfunding, because that means, you know, better pay for everybody involved, for the editors and artists and etc. Like you said, the project involves five different creators, up and coming RPG designers from Latin America. Three of us are from Brazil and the other two are from Argentina. Each of us is creating a different game, and we're going to be publishing them digitally and physically. There's going to be a print run for these books on the Kickstarter. You can back either on a one book pledge level, or you can back for all five of them for a pretty significant discount.
And we have a discount for Global South backers too.
That is correct, yeah. Yeah, if you are suffering from financial hardship due to being from the Global South / the periphery / the third world, you can bag at that tier for the digital products and get them for a much, much lower price. And this project is being brought to life, I'd say, thanks to the help of Soul Muppet Publishing. We've been working with Matt Sanders and Zachary Cox, whose games you might know. Maybe you've, you know, played or read about Orbital Blues or Best Left Buried. Matt did the SRD for Wretched and Alone, the system you used to play the Wretched by Chris Bissett. And they have been generous and kind towards us, because they are actually running the actual crowdfunding, because one issue that affects creators from the Global South is that we cannot actually do a Kickstarter project due to several reasons. It's not a very transparent motive, but the only countries that can actually run a crowdfunding project on Kickstarter are North American countries, most of Europe, Japan, and Australia. And that leaves a lot of people who are not from those countries unable to get the money that they need to, you know, pay for art and editing and layout and printing, which is also very expensive. So what Soul Muppet is doing for us is that they are giving us a budget that has already been recouped thanks to the Kickstarter being funded. And that's what's allowing us to actually bring these games to life in a way that would have been either very difficult or impossible otherwise.
Yeah, I interviewed another creator there from the Philippines a few months back, and that's when I had learned that not every country has access to Kickstarter.
That is correct. Yeah. They'll take our money. They just won't let us do a project.
Right. Exactly. So I'm very glad that Soul Muppet Publishing has been so helpful with this project. Before we dive into the games, which I'm extremely interested in hearing about, how did you find Soul Muppet Publishing for this project? Like, did they come to one of you, or did someone in your group pitch them the idea? How did that come about?
They came to us, at least for me. It was funny because my previous game, Marvelous Mutations and Merry Musicians, was published by Exalted Funeral. And at the same week that I signed the contract with Exalted Funeral, Matt from Soul Muppet came to me wanting to publish it too. And I was already writing this game that's on Kickstarter. So I told him that I had already signed with Exalted Funeral, but I had something that was very much his vibe next. And he said, oh, okay, I'll be in touch. And then some months later, he came to me like, oh, remember that we talked, there's going to be a thing, and we would like to know if you're interested in being part of it. And that was it.
That's great. When you have two publishers who want to publish your game, I feel like that's an excellent problem to have.
Yeah. Actually, I had three.
Even better. It's an even better problem to have, Wendy.
Yeah.
Misha, how about you? How did you get connected with them for this project?
As for myself, I wasn't directly approached by them, but they had already approached Luna, another of their creators, mm-hmm. and my fellow Argentinian. And I guess that they asked her if she knew any designers from Argentina who would be interested in joining up. So she told me about it. And at the time, I wasn't even sure if I wanted to, because I wasn't sure that I had an actual game to contribute. And looking back on that, that seems unimaginable now. Because I've been working so hard on this game. I have written so much. And so thanks to Luna, I got in contact with, you know, Matt and Zach. And after that, we just, you know, started talking. They liked my pitch for the game. And that was that.
Fantastic. Well, I'm very glad that Matt and Zach have been so supportive. However, there would be nothing to support without your games. So I would love to hear about each of your games. Wendy, do you want to go first?
Sure. My game's called Here, There, Be Monsters with commas and an exclamation point. It's about monster hunting from the side of the monsters. It's at the same time a love letter and a fuck you and a middle finger to stuff like Hellboy or the SCP Foundation, X-Files, Delta Green. I'm sure I'm forgetting anything. And the World of Darkness universe also. It's about how I always liked monster hunting media and urban fantasy, but there's a famous quote by Susan Stryker, who is a lead trans writer, and she says, I am transgender, therefore I am a monster. And that resonates with me a lot, because if stuff like the X-Files or the SCP Foundation and stuff, they're containing anomalies in order to protect normalcy, whatever is not seen as normal would also be hunted by them, right? And I am trans, and I'm from the Global South, and I feel I would not be on the side of the agencies or the foundations. You know, I would be on the side of the anomalies, and that game started like that. So the players play as a group of rebel monsters / anomalies / weird people who somehow got involved with the underworld, the occult stuff. And it's very rules-light. It's more about tools for getting your game together than lots of rules. And yeah, you play as these group of monsters against either people who would like to keep the world normal and erase all abnormalities, like the SCP Foundation alike, from the setting that's called D-Bureau, and also against neo-Nazis who would like to use occult stuff to, you know, erase all difference too. So you can and you should definitely punch Nazis in this game. And other factions like a multinational company that's trying to exploit the magic for profit, or club of aristocrats who like to hunt and eat magical beings and stuff like that. And you're basically protecting other monsters and magical beings from a world that doesn't want them to be there. It's basically about our own monstrosity, and it's not just about queerness. It's monstrosity as anything that's out of the ordinary, anything that's not seen as normal. So it's about monstrosity as something to be cherished, you know, something to be protected, something to be loved, and about fighting back.
Not only do I think that's a very cool concept, I also, a cool concept being that you get to fight as a monster instead of as a human or being fighting against the monsters. I really like that you switch that up. But I also always enjoy talking to folks who are really passionate and who design from their heart. And it sounds like that's what you've done. I do have one question before we hear about Misha's game, which I'm also excited to hear about. So for Here, There, Be Monsters! Exclamation point. Is there a set group that is trying to attack you, or is that something that you make up or create at your table?
Both. Okay. I give, I think, 5 different factions that could be used as antagonists, but there are many random generators and stuff that you can use to create your own occult underworld, stuff like that. So you can easily populate your underground.
I really enjoy games where you have a starting point in case, one, you're not sure where to start, or two, you don't have all the time to create your own, but that still is open enough that you can create your own if that's something your table would like to do.
Yeah, that's what was on my mind. The idea of anti-canon, like there are tools for you to bring your own canon to the table, not a fully realized setting, but signs and suggested stuff, you know, implicit stuff.
Right, exactly. So that folks can have tools that you've provided, but also be as creative as they would like to be. How does monster or character creation work? At least what has been written so far, because as a reminder to listeners, usually with Kickstarters, games are not always fully complete. So anything you can share about that?
Character creation is pretty simple. You have a choice of 100 backgrounds, and you randomly roll, or you choose your choice. And you have all of those backgrounds. They are not classes or playbooks. They are just there to guide. Like, there are suggestions and stuff in each background, but nothing set on stone. What's there in character creation is you have 3 sets of 2 tags, and that's it. You have a B tag, that's anything that significantly defines your character, like a musician or a goth kid or something like that, something that you find that defines your character in a few words. You have do tags, that would be your skills, anything that your character excels at, like doing math or building robots or anything like that. And you have tags that are equipment, anything of value that your character carries with them. So you have those six tags, and resolution is when you are trying to do something that can have unexpected results or something dangerous or anything like that, you usually roll 2d6 and see how you go. If you have a tag that could help you, you roll 3d6 and take the two highest. So character creation is basically that. You can also have magic, and then there are a few extra rules for magic, but basically you just roll your background and see where you go from there in writing your tags.
And is it a 2d6 type of system then, or rule set?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much, Wendy. I'm sure we'll come back to you though for more questions. But Misha, would you mind sharing what your game is about?
My game is called Cantrip. It is a belonging outside belonging game, which for anybody who is not aware is a family of games, let's call it, based on the Powered by the Apocalypse framework that focuses on marginalized communities and how the people living in them are fully realized human beings, or sometimes not human beings, but fully realized sentient beings, and how they have their own problems and how they rise up despite being marginalized, how they thrive and prosper and endure and survive. So Cantrip follows that whole tradition, and it is about young witches, like anywhere from like 16 to let's say 20 years old, attending school to learn magic. When designing Cantrip, my main goal was to lean away from the archaic and reactionary tropes that are sometimes very common with, this whole magical academy subgenre of fiction, and especially certain works that have not aged well at all, and instead lean into things that are lesser known but also much better, not just as works of fiction but also as works of representation of human beings. So what I'm saying in fewer words is that Cantrip is much less Harry Potter and much more inspired by Studio Trigger's Little Witch Academia, by the manga Witch Hat Atelier. It's also inspired by Slice of Life anime. Mostly, I'm a big fan of, let's say, Eurocamp or Nonnobiori, and it tries to tap into some of that cozy, wholesome kind of pastoral energy that they have. And I'm also taking a lot of inspiration from any kind of media in which the magical and the mundane mix. Anywhere from like the Persona video games to, I don't know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. In Cantrip, in play, you will create your witch, choosing from one out of six playbooks. And you will also create certain aspects of the school itself. You will try to get through a whole year, your first year at the academy. And when I say the academy is, there are certain things about the setting that are set in stone. Like the witches attend school when they're young. Magic is somewhat common. People are aware of witches, but aren't necessarily accepting of them. And there is a school, some kind of academy, some kind of place of learning, but you choose what form this place of learning takes. If you want it to be like the typical castle by a lake, That's fine. If you want to picture your story happening in like a modern university campus, that's available too. Or maybe it's just, I don't know, a collection of huts and houses way out in the countryside. In the last playtest we did, the school was like a stone circle on a floating island chained to the coast. It's very narrative, so the game won't break if you try something really out there. And as well as playing, you know, your playbook, which has a lot of different prompts and a certain central conflict that hounds your witch all throughout her life, and that she will be trying to either confront or surpass in some way. But you also control the aspects, which is a common feature of BOB games or No Dice, No Masters games, which are elements of the setting. In the case of Cantrip, the aspects are stuff like the adults or the student body or the weave, which is the name for the ever-present semi-sentient entity that is magic itself, from which witches tap into to draw its power and be able to cast spells. Each of the playbooks is one, they're all very queer. That is, of course, intentional. The game text itself mentions that just like in real life, witches are seen as being exclusively girls and women. And that might be the case for maybe the older generation of witches. But this new younger generation, which you will be a member of, has some wildly new ideas about gender that are all set to upturn this otherwise very conservative society. So while witches in the text and in the art will be very much femme-presenting, there's nothing stopping you from playing around with gender as much as you like. Each of the playbooks, in a way, represents some aspect of myself. For instance, there is one playbook called The Starstruck, which if you've watched Little Witch Academia, it is basically Akko, the main character. Her whole deal is that she suddenly learned magic instead of being born into it, and she's the only witch in the game who can only cast one spell throughout the game. You pick it at the beginning, and then you can never change it or learn another. What this character is, it is my imposter syndrome, which if somebody plays it and finds a way to work through it, I would like to hear about it. I don't know, just one more example, the Hedge, who is a hedge witch, very much revered and feared back in her home village, but now she's in the city among a much larger society. She's very overwhelmed by all the noise and the bustle and the sudden, you know, social etiquette norms that she's expected to know and follow. And what she represents is my own journey as a very young kid, moving from the countryside into the big city, moving into Buenos Aires, and also being very overwhelmed and upset at how noisy and how big everything was. One major difference that I guess these playbooks have with usual BOB playbooks is that in most BOB games, the playbooks are very, very open-ended, like very open to interpretation. Very much an invitation to make them your own. And in Cantrip, they are much more narrowly defined. They are not quite like choosing a predefined character, but they do have a lot more stuff front-loaded into the playbook than in other BOB games, or I guess in most PBTA games. which is one reason that there is an actual piece of art accompanying each of the playbooks, which isn't common at all in BOB games. Speaking of art, I want to give a huge shout out to the artist. Her name is Celeste Cruz. She is Costa Rican, based in New York City. You can find her art at celestecruzart.com. And she's also on Twitter as Kaelstyx, C-A-E-L-S-T-Y-X. She has been doing a fantastic job with the art. She's nearly done with it. She totally understands the project and she brings it to life in a way that is, sorry to use the word, but it's pretty much magical. I cannot recommend it enough. Please go buy her art.
Ready for a rules-light, narrative, failing-forward, collaborative storytelling tabletop role-playing game?
Unsure of where to start?
Powered by the Players is an actual play podcast featuring mini campaigns and one-shots of all your favorite Powered by the Apocalypse games.
Each campaign or one-shot will be a different PBTA game with a rotating cast of diverse players. We've got Masks, a teenage superhero drama.
Bluebeard's Bride, a feminist horror retelling.
Monster of the Week, a supernatural mystery.
Escape from Dino Island, a Jurassic Park-inspired adventure.
Crossroads Carnival, a Depression-era sideshow noir.
The next game you play could be yours. So join Morgan, Kristen, and Diana.
And let's power up.
Follow us on Twitter at PBTPlayers.
Subscribe on your favorite podcatcher.
It's beautiful. I'm looking at it on the Kickstarter page right now, since again, this Kickstarter is live. It's very cool. There is a lot to see, and like the background is beautiful. I love the differences of the three sentient beings that are they on a broom?
They are on the broom. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Oh yeah. Now I see it. It looks like there's like a sock on the end. Oh, I love it so much. Are they or she the artist for all the games, or did the games have different artists?
They all have different artists. Some of them have several artists. In my case, it's just Celeste from cover to cover. And Wendy has been working with some amazing artists as well.
My game is completely illustrated by Lino Arruda. He is a transmasculine guy from Brazil. And when I knew that I would have a budget to hire an artist, he was the first name in my mind. And I think when you see the art for the game, you will understand why. Because he can capture a feeling of grotesque, but at the same time, magical, I think, that is very, very unique to his style, and it's just a perfect match. And we've been working together to create the illustrations with the, I gave him like all the random lists and stuff, and he created from there, basically. He had total freedom to illustrate, to draw whatever he wanted, and that's working.
Yeah, the piece that is shared on Kickstarter is stunning in an equal but completely different way than the artist on that's working with Misha. And I love that, because obviously you are two individuals. Well, you're five individuals total, but on the call today, you're two individuals with different games. And so it's very cool that y'all were able to work with different
And that's
artists.
Something that I would like to talk about. Like, it's funny because my game and Misha's game are like aesthetically they're polar opposites, right?
Totally, yeah.
Yep.
But they share this worldview behind the games. They share this feeling that drove us to write the games, I think. I think Misha's game is the one that I identify with the most. I'm very happy that we got to have this huge diversity in styles and rule sets and aesthetics for the project. It's very diverse in all these aspects, but at the same time, they are siblings in a way.
Siblings, yeah, absolutely. I like that comparison. Go totally, ahead, Misha.
Yeah. I feel like if somebody gets all five games and plays them all back to back, they're going to at some point play Cantrip, and despite being so different tonally, they're going to think, hey, this reminds me a little bit of Here There Be Monsters. Like, I'm kind of dealing with the same themes, just in a different setting.
Exactly.
Cantrip is more low stakes and more languid, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Here There Be Monsters is much more action packed, much more intense.
Yeah. And also, Cantrip is totally family friendly, and Here There Be Monsters is not safe for work.
To get alternative art for some of the pieces.
I had to censor some genitalia and nipples for the Kickstarter page, because this game has bodies, and some of those bodies are naked, and some of those naked bodies have different genitals and have nipples and stuff, and maybe that's not your thing, and that's totally fine, but that was what we went for, because it's all about those repressed, those oppressed bodies, and those bodies being free to express themselves however they want. We had some people who were already kind of shocked with the art, what we have shown so far, because it's not only not safe for work, but it's also monstrous and grotesque. And I think that this kind of discomfort is productive. It's something good. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited to see how people are going to react to the book itself. Not that I want to just shock people. That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
But there's this, completely forgot who said it, but someone said that art should give comfort to those who are uncomfortable, and discomfort to those who are comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what was on my mind, and certainly on Lino's mind as well. Like, us monsters can feel comfortable with the fact that this game is all about us finding a chosen family and building a community and fighting back together. And those who are not monsters are going to feel some level of discomfort, and that discomfort is going to be productive in making them challenge their assumptions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. And I'm not that you needed to say it, but I'm glad that you explained that it wasn't for shock value, right? It's well thought out. It comes from like a genuine place. So again, I want to say you didn't need to explain yourself, but I appreciate it, because I think it's very helpful for folks to hear.
And you never get these, complaints of discomfort when people are looking at, say, you know, that typical Conan the Barbarian style art, you know, the classic, the woman wearing basically nothing, clutching the leg of the hero, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, gross. You don't get those kinds of questions when people post that art. And not just, you know, repost the old covers, when people make new art in 2021. That goes totally unquestioned and uninterrogated. And it's good that you're turning the tables on that.
Okay, I do have one question. Misha, you explained your game beautifully. I'm excited to play it as well. I know that in most PBTA games and a lot of belonging, outside belonging games, relationships or relationship questions are often included. While making the playbooks, did you include any relationship building questions, or did you choose to omit that from your game?
as you know, in BOB games, when you create a character, you don't really have stats, just a lot of pick lists with several questions. And the very last thing you pick is something pretty typical in the genre, which is questions that you ask to your left and to your right. They're usually very, very, very emotional questions that immediately either expose a clear relationship between two characters, or they expose one of the playbook's more vulnerable emotional layers. So that's how the relationships are built at the beginning. I'm trying to emphasize that when you begin play, the girls know each other somewhat. Like, you start, let's say, in the middle of your first school month, and they might be friends, but they don't know each other very well. Maybe they don't even know themselves very well at this point, but they're going to stick through it together and get to know each other and get to know themselves better through play. And one way that that is encouraged is that something that has been my personal experience with BOB games, like me and my regular groups, is that sometimes we find ourselves at a loss for how to continue. Like, we resolve some kind of conflict and we have trouble coming up with like the next leg of our journey. Mm-hmm. And Cantrip tries to help you with that by including what is basically a school calendar. It's actually called the school calendar mechanically, which is the school year is broken up into 4 month periods, and each month has like one big event. The event itself is like a prompt for conflict and for, you know, new adventures, new kinds of trouble you can get into. And each of these events has two seasonal moves, like one weak move so you can gain a token, and one seasonal strong move where you spend tokens that are related to what's going on. Like, some of my favorite piece of writing by myself is in one of these seasonal moves. There's one, I believe it's the third month of the year, where there is a talent show. And the seasonal moves for the talent show, the weak move is called break a leg, literal, and the strong move is break a leg, figurative.
I love this so much.
That's so good.
That's what we played in the last playtest, and it was really, really fun. Like, those are, honestly, they're good moves. I am trying to encourage collaborative world building. I love games about collaborative world building. Like, I love playing Microscope and Kingdom and stuff like that. Big fan of those games. So, and a way that you create the setting together is that each playbook has a weak move that doesn't really behave like a weak move, because it doesn't really put you in a vulnerable position, but it just lets you establish a fact about some aspect of the world, the setting, the history, the lore that is related to your playbook's, let's say, specialty. And just by speaking that into reality, one, it becomes true. Secondly, you get a token. You can always spend a token as a strong move to cast a previously unrevealed spell. So you don't pick spells from a list before you play. You just literally pull them out of your hat whenever it's convenient or fun or interesting by spending a token. And once you've cast it, you can consider it learned, and you can just cast it whenever as a regular move. This is something that I basically lifted this tech from another BOB game called Le Système D. This is by Monkey's Paw Games. Mm-hmm. It's a BOB game about being workers at a restaurant or a bar. And each of the playbooks has a very proletarian feel. Where you are there playing, I don't know, you're playing a line cook, a fry cook, a busser, a bartender, and one of the strong moves is reveal a previously unmentioned skill. It's a great game. I encourage everybody to go check it out, especially if you've ever worked in the food industry. It'll be very relatable. Like, it is obviously written by somebody who has had that experience, especially the front of house experience.
Yeah, as someone who has worked in restaurants, I think that would be a very fun game for me to play. And I haven't played it yet, so thank you for introducing me to a new game, not just our audience. So we can go back to, and going back for a second to Here There Be Monsters, Wendy, I meant to ask you, do you feel that Here There Be Monsters lends itself more to being a one-shot, a campaign, or possibly both?
Both. I miss campaign play. I love playing longer campaigns, and I haven't played one since like 2018, 2017. So yeah, I miss campaigns. And I'm a screenwriter. My job, I guess, is as a screenwriter. And one thing that I adapted from screenwriting is a system of, like, every character, if you want to play longer form, if you're playing a one shot, that's fine. You don't need to use that. But if you want to play a longer game, each character has wants and needs. Wants are things that your character objectively wants. They want to save the princess. They want to get revenge from the man that killed their father, stuff like that. Needs are things that your character maybe doesn't know about, but they need to go through in order to have a satisfying end for their story. And so, like, maybe you wanna get revenge from the man who killed your father, but what you need is to learn to let go of your grudges or something like that. And then there is a system of beats. That's also something that I adapted from screenwriting, that each time that you do something towards getting what you want or what you need, there's this kind of trigger that makes each role related to getting there harder, because it's building up to a climax. But also each role that would maybe take your character away from their journey gets easier. So you start getting to this climax and you start getting a sense of a character arc. You know, that's something that I got from screenwriting classes and stuff that I thought would be good in a game. And it's also part of my last game and people liked it, so I wanted to bring it back. So yeah, it works both ways, as one shot and longer form campaigns. And Misha talked about collaborative world building, and that's also something that you have in Here There Be Monsters. So you can also use the collaborative word building tools for one shot or long form. They will work.
That's great. I enjoy all kinds of games. It's always nice when one can be played as a one shot or, you know, or a campaign. And I particularly like that you added that piece of the beats that you learned from screenwriting, because it's always interesting to me what designers bring to the table, right? I feel like some folks feel like maybe they couldn't design a game, but you'd be surprised what life experience or professional experience you can actually pull from to create games. So that's very interesting. I'm looking forward to that piece of it as well. Before we jump into the Kickstarter, which again has already funded, so these games are being made, Misha, would you mind talking a little bit about the editors? Because I know that they played a big part in this project as well.
Yes, of course. We are working with several editors from both the RPG scenes, RPG Southeast Asia, and from RPG Latam. My game, Cantrip, as well as Mayflies, another of the games, are being edited by Pam. You can find Pam at the Dove Taylor. com. That is Taylor with an I. And Pam is Excellent. I have no words for how amazing Pam is, both as a person, as a creator, and as an editor. Cantrip was competently written before Pam got their hands on it, but thanks to Pam's edits, it is now what I think is really an excellent. Pam doesn't just catch your, you know, grammar errors or your bad punctuation, but they also help you get your own voice across in your text so much better, so much more organically. They really do a fantastic job. It is such a pleasure to work with them, and I cannot recommend Pam's editing work enough. Again, thedovetaylor.com.
And my game and Luna's game is edited by Sam. You can find her at Bubblegum Sam, both at Itch and Twitter. Sam is just also amazing. And I love how the RPGC and the RPG LATAM scenes feel like different sides of the same big family. They kind of get the sensibilities behind our aesthetics and vibes and ideas. They kind of share it with us. And I love people and the games from that scene so much. And it's a huge honor to be working with Sam. So if you want to edit your games, you can also hire Sam.
Okay, and before we wrap up and say goodbye, I would like to hear anything about the Kickstarter that you want to and are able to at this time share with our listeners.
First of all, as you've mentioned, the Kickstarter has funded. So that's a huge weight off our backs because, like you said, it means that the games are getting made, no question. Also, like we mentioned, there are special backer tiers if you're from the global South and you still want to support the project. The Kickstarter, since it's made from the UK, is priced in pounds. So I will just be saying the prices in pounds. Okay. So you can get as a Global South backer, you can get the single PDF for £5, or you can get the whole digital collection of all five games for 15, which is about $21. You can also back for a single PDF, a single physical book, or you can back for all five PDFs, or you can back for all five physical books, which also gets you all five digital releases. We're also planning, and this is like beyond the Kickstarter, we're planning to do our own translations to Brazilian Portuguese and to Rioplatense Spanish, which is the Spanish that we speak in this part of South America. So we're going to do the translations and we're going to be selling them at a lowered price. As for the Kickstarter itself, we do not have any stretch goals announced yet. There are some that might be coming, but they're in the works. So I don't want to jinx anything at this point.
Yeah.
That's fair. We do like a secret stretch goal.
If we get more money in the Kickstarter, everyone gets paid more. And that's already a huge reward in itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, because thank you for mentioning that.
Such an issue in any kind of, you know, freelance work that people sometimes they feel like they have to undercharge to even get clients. So being able to pay people a fair rate and then some, that is just amazing because it means that LATAM Breakout isn't just helping us five designers. It's also helping artists and editors. Hopefully it also helps the whole of the RPG LATAM community, which is bigger than it seems. It is full of incredibly talented and passionate people. And all we are missing is access and resources. Like there's a lot of obstacles, financial, logistical obstacles. Hopefully LATAM Breakout is our foot in the door to help other creators get their games made.
Just another reason to back this project, in addition to the fact that the games are fantastic. Before we do say goodbye, I would like each of you to please let folks know where they can find you on the internet if you do want to be found. And if you have any projects outside of this one that you want to discuss, please feel free to do that as well. Wendy, can we start with you again?
Yeah, you can find me, all of my links and stuff and contact info at WendyU with just YU dot card with double R dot co, WendyU dot card dot co. I have another game that's published physically and it's sold at Exalted Funeral. It's called Marvelous Mutations and Merry Musicians, or for shorts. It's about post-apocalyptic kind of solar punk mutated musicians traveling from town to town and getting in adventures. I really like that game. So if you want to check it out, it's available as Pay What You Want on itch. It's also available physically from Exalted Funeral.
Misha, how about you?
You can find me on Twitter at Panarin underscore Misha. That is P-A-N-A-R-I-N underscore M-I-S-H-A. Also on mishapanarin.itch.io. Most of the stuff I have published there are small hacks, micro RPGs, and jam entries. But I'm currently working in parallel in several actual proper games that will be coming out pretty soon. So yeah, please give me a follow and get notified when these games go live.
Yeah, I have another Kickstarter coming next year. So keep tuned. It's horror stuff.
Hey, it's Amber. So that must mean it's the end of the episode. And also, it's almost the end of the year, which is quite frankly ridiculous. And, you know, as I was getting this episode ready to release and I was looking at our spreadsheet that I've made for this show, I realized something. We've missed a significant date. It's been one full year since James handed over the reins to Tabletop Babble and gave it to us at Geekspective to work on and to continue making content for. And wow, looking back through everything, we've done a lot. 57 episodes. This is the 57th episode we've done under Geekspective. So thank you all for continuing to listen and continuing to support the show. And if you've liked what we've been doing, please, please, please leave us a rating and review over on Apple Podcasts or any other podcatcher that allows that sort of thing. Or you could subscribe to Geekspective's YouTube channel and check out the show there. Give it a like on some of your favorite episodes or leave comments. That really also helps us out a lot. Or if you're on Twitter, go to our Twitter at Tabletop Babble and give us a follow. And please interact with us. Let us know if an episode comes out that you enjoy. Or if you see a game that's really interesting, please tag us. We love to see games. Anyway, a thing that I've been doing also at the end of these episodes is to read some of the reviews and comments that we get on our show. I recently asked people on Twitter to do so, and I got a bunch, actually, which is very, very nice and very, very sweet. And we've read them and we screen capped them all and we sent them to each other, and it made us so happy. So thank you. I'm picking one now to read, and I'm going to choose this one from G. I'm sorry, G. I cannot say your username. It's G-G-E-R-G-N-A-Y-R. And they say, the cycles of guests cover so much. From traps to dungeon design to Therian gaming, this is the kind of podcast that has made me a better GM. Amber, Kristen, and the whole crew took over a great podcast and have gone nowhere but up with it. I look forward to hearing more every week. Thank you, G-G-E-R-G-N-A-Y-R, for taking the time to leave us such a nice comment. We appreciate it, and we also appreciate you, dear listener. So until next time, bye-bye.